It's The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds. They were a familiar sight on Seattle streets, which they helped to build. They often worked 6 days a week. They even helped the city get ready for hosting a World's Fair. Those are the words that begin a four-part investigation into Seattle's history of using prisoners for labor, commonly known as chain gangs. Knut Berger wrote the series for Crosscut, but he didn't set out to write about chain gangs at all. Berger told Jeannie Yandel he learned about Seattle's chain gangs by accident.
I've been doing a bunch of research on turn-of-the-century Seattle, turn-of-the-20th century, and while doing the research, I found a reference to a criminal who had been sentenced to 63 days on the chain gang. This is around 1900. And I thought, wait a minute, chain gang, Seattle, you know, that's a Southern thing. And so it just piqued my curiosity, and I had been interested in the issues of Seattle's the sort of homeless and itinerant population of the early city, and began looking into it and found the chain gang was a regular feature of the cityscape for about 40 years.
When did Seattle start using chain gangs?
Well, the use of a ball and chains and working prisoners began in the early 1870s, at least that's as far back as I can track it. And at first, it was an authorized use by the city council of putting balls and chains on prisoners and allowing them to work off fines. So the people who went on it were people who couldn't afford to pay a fine for some kind of violation of a city ordinance. And it was kind of convenient for two reasons. One is that you had kind of forced labor that could do various street cleaning jobs and work around the city, chopping wood. And the second thing was the jails in those days were quite rickety. They weren't really built for a growing city or a full jailhouse. And putting a ball and chain on prisoners slowed them down, made sure they didn't escape.
So people who couldn't afford to pay fines ended up on the chain gang. But over the course of 40 years, as Seattle used these chain gangs, who was most likely to show up on these gangs?
Well, what today we would think of as homeless people, street people, the vagrancy laws of the 19th century were very specifically designed to cover a huge number of people, prostitutes, homosexuals, anybody suspicious, drunks. And often people who, if you didn't have enough money in your pocket to prove that you could support yourself and the police didn't like the looks of you, you went on the chain gang. So it was mostly the poor. It was people of all races. I found references to, you know, African-Americans, Native Americans, Asians, whites, all put on the same chain gang, although I think there was racial bias in some of the arrests. So essentially, they used it to try and deter and control large influx of itinerant workers.
And listeners could probably infer this from your last answer, but I kind of feel like it's important to state this. Who didn't end up on chain gangs?
People with money. People with some sense of privilege. Early Seattle was a very corrupt city. There was a payoff system for vice districts, and so you see a lot of inconsistency. Certain pimps or gamblers or just people who were hanging out doing up to no good on street corners would end up on the chain gang, but many of them were sprung in the court system. In fact, one Seattle judge was forced to resign because all the chain gang guys who came before him who worked for a particular gambling operators got off. So if you had a connection, if you knew who the right lawyers to hire, the right payoffs, or if you could afford the fines. And there was a growing discontent over time as people realized that rich men never served on the chain gang.
I'm talking with Knut Berger, and he wrote a four-part series for Crosscut about the city of Seattle's use of chain gangs from the 1870s to the early 1900s, maybe 1911 or 1912. And one of the things that you also wrote about was the condition of the jails. You just said that jails in the 1870s were pretty rickety and couldn't handle the influx of people that we saw in the city. But what else was going on in the jail system then?
Well, after the Great Fire in Seattle in 1889, the jail burned down, the police station burned down. And the municipal operations were moved into this former King County Courthouse that was sort of added onto. It was really kind of a jumble of a complex, and it had city government, the city jail, and the police department. It was called Katzenjammer Castle because it was modeled after a kind of chaotic house in the Katzenjammer Kids cartoon. And they built new jails in there, and they dug basically hovels in the basement. They called it the Black Hole. It was a place where prisoners were punished. They were put there and put on a bread and water diet. It was dark. And over time, it became incredibly filthy. It was notorious really throughout the country as vermin-ridden, disease-ridden. There was worry about the plague. There were typhoid breakouts. There were prisoners were brutally treated. Seattle wanted to send a message to, it was growing very rapidly. You know, we grew from a city of a few thousand people in 1880s to a city by 1910 of 240-some thousand. Huge growth. And that doesn't even count all the itinerant and migrant, you know, laborers who were coming through and hanging out for part of the year here. So it was a big growing city. The jail didn't keep up, but they also wanted the jail to sort of scare people off. It was, and you see that in the police even said, you know, we want to be known across the country as a place you don't come to. And the conditions in the jail, the brutality of the prison guards, and the chain gang were touted as ways of keeping the city safe.
Were residents of Seattle okay with this reputation and with the fact that their jails were filthy and prisoners were brutally treated and they went on chain gangs?
Some people were and some people weren't. You see criticism of the idea of a chain gang as early as the 1870s when it was initiated. So you see people, and the common phrase was a barbaric relic. How can a Christian city, how can a progressive city, how can our city approve of such a thing? And that's a question that runs for 30 or 40 years.
I'm talking with Knute Berger. He's a frequent guest here at KUOW, and he wrote a four-part series for Crosscut looking at Seattle's use of chain gangs from the 1870s through the early 1900s. A big part of chain gangs and how the city used chain gangs came from the city trying to figure out how to deal with homeless people, which I think a lot of us consider kind of a modern problem. But as you write about it, clearly isn't. So that really connected the Seattle that you wrote about with the Seattle of today for me. How did researching and writing about chain gangs in the late 19th century connect you better to modern Seattle?
That's a great question because it did in a whole bunch of ways. One was how we deal, as you say, how we deal with the homeless, how we deal with things, the so-called civility laws, panhandling, all of those issues about social services and public safety and the sort of the intractability of some of those problems, all was there at the, you know, 100 plus years ago, and it's still there in very similar manifestations. People still get arrested because, as somebody said back in the vagrancy law days, you could be arrested because you looked funny or smelled bad. That can still happen. So that was a connection. I was also really interested in the struggles of the police, the prison conditions, the brutality, the institutional racism, the institutional biases. We're still struggling with that. We're still struggling with having a city that we want to be as safe as possible, yet we're still trying to figure out how to deal humanely with both victims, but also the perpetrators. So the law enforcement issues, the homeless issues, those social issues, and then there's the measure of what is the city? What is our rhetoric about the city and do we live up to it? People in the 19th century had very, very high ideals for Seattle. I mean, there were guys here who were grubbing to make money, and that was a big driver. But all along, you see people attributing to Seattle a kind of moral responsibility to be better, a better city than other cities, to be the perfect city, to be the city that shows everybody. We still have that strain in our civic life, but there's always this gap. And I think looking at that gap and taking those measurements, that's one thing that history can help us do.
Knut Berger, a frequent guest on KUOW, his four-part series on Seattle chain gangs is at crosscut.com. He spoke with Jeannie Yandel. You'll find a link to the series at KUOW.org. It's The Record on KUOW.